I'm Marty Moscowen. Welcome to Radio Times. The sound of leaf blowers that fills the autumn air, a volume that can reach as much as 100 decibels. And while there's no escaping the noise, what you might not know is that that the two-stroke engine of this gas-powered equipment emits a brew of toxic chemicals. One study found that 1 hour of use creates the same emissions as driving a 2017 Toyota Camry 1,100 miles. And while the sound can be a nuisance, there are concerns about lawn crews who operate these blowers for many hours a day. All of these issues are spurring communities to ban gas-powered leaf blowers or restrict their use. It happened in Washington, D.C., it's happening in California, and it could happen in New Jersey, where a bill for a statewide ban has been introduced. Let me open the lines because we do want to hear from you, especially on this particular issue. Email us at radiotimes@whyy.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, and you can always call. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. Joining us is Nancy Adams. She is Maplewood, New Jersey Township Committee member who helped to pass the ban on gas-powered leaf blowers in her community. And Nancy Adams, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you. Thanks. Nice to be here.
Nice to have you with us. So what or who sparked this ban?
Actually, it was my first term in office in 2016, and someone came to the podium for public comment and asked a question about them. And I had, you know, I've lived in Maplewood for 32 years, and I was an at-home mother for a while, and then I went out in the workforce. And in 2013, I returned and was doing consulting work from home, and I noticed a big difference. The noise that was bombarding my office at home was non-existent when I was an at-home mother, so I was perplexed. And when this resident brought it up, I agreed and realized that this is something that impacts us all. So we started looking at it from a noise perspective because of the bother that most of us get from that, right? So, and then once you go down the rabbit hole of everything that's wrong with these pieces of equipment, it's kind of overwhelming, and there's more to it.
And so, I do want to get to that rabbit hole. I wonder, too, whether during the pandemic, when more people were working from home, whether others felt as you did, which was if you had been out at work during the day, there you are home and hearing the din of these lawn blowers, leaf blowers, I should say.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. It was actually what spurred what we were doing was a seasonal ban for the summers, basically. And the pandemic actually had people contacting us in, you know, the shutdown in March and early April, knowing that our restriction went into effect on May 1st, asking us to please stop them sooner. And these are some of the same people who thought it was the stupidest thing to be regulating and focusing on. And now they were, because they went to, you know, took the train into Manhattan every day and came home to a pristine lawn, not realizing what happened when they were gone. So.
Well, let's talk about, and we are talking specifically about these two-stroke gas-powered leaf blowers. I'm sure you had to educate yourself on how they work. What are we talking about here? How does it work, and how does it create this environmental and health hazard?
Yeah, well, these engines that are used for the two-stroke engines, what most people think of as backpack blowers, they used to be used on motorcycles as well, and maybe still are, but they are, you know, regulated when they're manufactured, and they have to be manufactured to a certain standard. But unlike motorcycles and vehicles, there's no mandate for regular emissions testing on this equipment. So it's a combination of gas and oil to power these machines, and 30% of that gas and oil is released unburned to the air and directly into the lungs of the worker wearing them. Not only that, but then there's the smell we all smell of the gas when they're being used nearby, and that's also being inhaled by everything nearby, including those workers.
Including those workers. And I do want to talk about those workers. We're talking, what about benzene, carbon monoxide? What other chemicals are we talking about?
You got me. I'm not a chemist. It's something I learned about once upon a time, but I wouldn't pretend to know all the different chemicals. But yeah, suffice to say that it's not something that, I mean, look, we're trying to transition to electric cars for a reason, and cars don't even come close to emitting what these things that are in our communities blowing all day long and sometimes year-round is not sustainable, frankly.
Well, let's talk about the crews. I mean, some people do their own lawns, but a lot of people hire crews to come and do their lawns, or they're doing schools or businesses or other sort of wide areas of lawn care. Do we know the impact on lawn crew?
We don't. There's no data that I know of personally, but about whether what impacts this is having, at least directly with regard to the fumes and cancers. But there is record of gas station workers, attendants, who have cancers from those same fumes that they're breathing in while pumping gas or while working as a mechanic. And so there is data similar. What's happening, though, is, these are typically lower wage, sometimes immigrant workers who are just trying to raise money for their families, and they take this job. They are not typically trained on how to use what they're putting on their backs. They often are not given equipment to protect their breathing. Certainly, sometimes they are given professional muffs for their ears to try to protect their hearing. But the reality is they're strapping these things on their back for 8 hours a day, sometimes 7 days a week, and not even aware of the damage they're potentially doing to their own health.
Now, you began with restrictions, and my understanding is in 2023 there will be a ban in your community?
Yes, actually, and to your point before of the pandemic, there was a young mom resident who moved to town a few years ago and contacted me appreciating the seasonal ban, but we started getting pushback from people saying, if these are bad at any time, why are we ever allowing them? And I totally agreed with that. I didn't have the votes on my fellow members of the governing body to do a year-round ban. And that one resident, I put her on, I told her to join the Environmental Advisory Committee, and then she could do a presentation. She did. She had a doctor. She had a scientist. And she did a 20-minute presentation to the council. And we listened, and we decided, yeah, you're right. Why are we only restricting these? Because we restrict, government regulates all sorts of things, right? Mm-hmm. There's lead paint. We discovered there's lead paint on the sides of our old homes in our town. So, 15 years ago, the town required painting companies to put a tarp over it when they're sanding it, so that doesn't get released to the air. And this is similar. We're regulating how something is used, when, and, if it can be used at all.
Did you face lawsuits, this ban?
Yes, absolutely. The New Jersey Landscaper Association sued us on a few different grounds, that we were overstepping, our authority, things like that. We prevailed on all counts of that lawsuit, and we even prevailed when they asked us to pay their legal fees.
Oh, interesting.
We said no, thank you.
Now, there is a bill in New Jersey to make this a statewide ban. Obviously, that's going to take some time, but I'd be curious about whether other communities are looking at what you did in your community of Maplewood and wanting to follow suit.
Yeah, part of me thinks I could leave my day job and charge
really?
For the consulting I've done.
You're now an expert, right?
Apparently. No, I've consulted communities from everywhere, from New Haven, Connecticut, to the tri-state area up here, and Spring Lake, New Jersey, and different towns contacted me, particularly over COVID and those couple of years when people were realizing it more personally. So they, you know, were asking, how did you get it done? What did you do? What do you do when DPW has to use them? And I'm like, I don't understand the problem. You made a law. We follow our own laws. So DPW can, Public Works can no longer use gas-powered leaf blowers either. So, you know.
Well, are electric leaf blowers allowed?
Yes, they're constantly being made better, and there are ways to get around that. We've, you know, when we first started talking about this, the landscapers were saying that we would, you know, they would have to raise prices, things would take early. But look, the main reason was in the summer, there's really nothing to blow, and this formula that these companies tend to use is to come in every week and do the exact same thing on every property, regardless of what's needed. So they mow, trim, and blow, even when, and our point was there's nothing to blow always. So why are you blowing just because? And it's just a formula that works for them. And I think we can ask them to do better, and we can ask them to look at ways not only to protect the environment, and people are still going to want to hire them.
Sure.
And typically, when I hire a contractor, I don't ask what kind of tools they're using. I expect that they're going to just do what I want done. And, you know, I don't care what kind of paintbrush paints my wall, right? So we should feel the same way about these contractors and ask them to do better for their workers and also for our yards and our environment, and I think that's fair.
Well, in fact, we'll be talking with a landscape professional from an association and just right after this very short break. Let me just read a comment or two from Jennifer. She says, leaf blowers are horrible for those of us who suffer from allergies. Nancy, did you hear that from your community?
Oh, totally. Not only that, but typically, as many things with health, they impact the youngest among us and the oldest among us also. And with regard to asthma or any kind of breathing issues, no, they're really, really bad on a lot of levels. In fact, they run at a decibel level that's different than most machinery. So it penetrates doors, windows, and walls. So you really can't escape it when they're nearby. And the noise, even noise itself, causes stress levels that increase heart disease risk and risk of stroke. And it's kind of crazy. Wow. If I told you, we didn't want to go down that rabbit hole quite yet. But yeah, it's pretty intense, and it impacts our health and our residents' health quite a bit.
Well, we're going to take a very short break, and we'll get back to Nancy Adams. She is Maplewood, New Jersey Township Committee member, and she helped to pass the ban on gas-powered leaf blowers in her community. In fact, after this short break, we'll be talking with the Senior Vice President of Government Relations for the National Association of Landscape Professionals. In the meantime, we want to hear from you. Email us at radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. You can always call that phone number 1-888-477-9499. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. We are talking, yes, about gas-powered leaf blowers. Some communities across the country are taking steps to either restrict or ban their use. And again, we've been talking with Nancy Adams from Maplewood, New Jersey. Joining us now is Andrew Bray, Senior Vice President of Government Relations for the National Association of Landscape Professionals. And Andrew Bray, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Great. Thanks so much for having me.
You're very welcome. So why do you and those lawn care professionals, why do you need to use two-stroke gas-powered leaf blowers?
Well, I think that's a great question. And I'd like to, you know, first say that, you know, our industry really wants to embrace all new technologies. I mean, we are stewards of the environment. We work daily to take care of our nation's green spaces, which sequester carbon, produce oxygen, and cooler cities and towns. And leaf blowers play an integral role in that whole process. They're invaluable tools to make our jobs more efficient in the way we operate. Now, the electric counterparts that are coming to market are moving quickly, and they're progressing. And we want to embrace a responsible transition to these leaf blowers. But at this time, there continues to be serious impediments involving cost, performance, and the existing infrastructure to support this transition on a full scale.
Well, let me pick up on that. What kind of cost are we talking about? Let's say you are a company that uses these gas-powered leaf blowers. What would it cost with a crew of, let's say, eight people to go electric?
So when you look at, think of the difference, the commercial sort of backpack leaf blower, different than the handheld that maybe you or I may use, is going to cost about $400 per piece of equipment, right? But then when you actually have to deal with the battery, which you're going to need several batteries per per day, will range anywhere from $870 to, you know, $1,100, right? And so the batteries really are where you have a lot of the cost. And you're having to change them out depending on what sort of equipment you're using. Some can be as short as 18 to 22 minutes. So that can really add up to where one person on a crew in a given day might need the total of 10 batteries, right? And so if you're buying a battery at the high end of the 870 or the low end around 250, right, you're talking about anywhere between $2,400 and $8,700 just for that one piece of equipment.
Could that be a selling point? I mean, I'm not in the lawn care business, but I know a lot of people worry about the environment and they want to make sure that what they do with their yard, their lawn, is going to be a benefit to the environment. Is that a selling point and a point that you could use to say, yeah, it's going to cost you a little bit more, but look at the benefits?
Sure. Yeah. And I think there are many companies that are out there doing that right now. We know on average, kind of the markup that we think a full transition is going to cost is somewhere between a 30 and 40% difference to the end consumer. But I think you're exactly right, which is why, you know, it's great to talk to the market that is in New Jersey, because we've actually partnered with our state association there, and we've partnered with an entity called the American Green Zone Alliance. And we actually held a workshop this summer. It was in September, to really encourage landscape companies to make this transition. What we kind of really are pushing back on are arbitrary bans that aren't taken into account that we really want to support this responsible transition.
Well, let me get Nancy Adams back in on the conversation. She's been telling us about the ban in Maplewood, New Jersey. And I wonder from your experience, Nancy, just hearing what we're hearing from Andrew Bray, do you see lawn care companies as the enemy or someone that you can work with to address this problem?
Yeah, no, I'd rather not see anybody as an enemy on an issue such as important as this. I'm really pleased to hear that you met with Dan Mabe at EGSA to talk about ways you can do this better. I would say that likely the way leaf blowers are used would be altered if you were using battery operated ones in order to save the battery power that you were just referring to. You can see landscapers, the workers just kind of walking down the sidewalk blowing a couple blades of grass and things like that. There's a lot of unnecessary blowing. And I would just the National Landscaper Association, on their website back in 2017, I read from their own rules and regulations on how to use gas-powered leaf blowers. And they, after I read from it from the dais, one of the New Jersey Landscaper Association members contacted the National organization, and they took down those rules because they say things like leaf blowers should not be used within 10 feet of doors and windows, debris should never be blown onto adjacent property or the street, only one leaf blower at a time should be used in small residential areas, and a whole list of logical and reasonable rules for how to use them, and they aren't being followed that way. And in fact, I was disappointed to see that the National Association took that document down back then.
Well, Andrew, let me pick up on that and also just focus a little bit more on these crews that work for these landscape companies, you know, knowing that we are talking about the pollution that can come out from these two-stroke engines and the fact that they are working so close with this machinery. And sometimes you see them with the crews with headphones and things, but are they really going to, are they really protected from all the potential threat from these blowers?
Yeah, no, I think that's a great point. And I want to be sure to make sure everybody understands that we take safety extremely seriously in this industry. We actually have a partner. We have a partnership with OSHA. We do trainings on a monthly basis, and safety is always of the utmost importance to us. And we are held to very high standards. And basically, we work under the paradigm of what our regulators tell us we need to do. And so if OSHA says you need to wear the earplugs or you need to wear eyewear, then that's what we are going to do. And, you know, if they say that a respirator is needed to be worn, which is needed to be worn for certain sort of equipment that we use, then we would wear them. But at this point, the regulators that are determining what is safe and what is not, what are what members of the industry should be doing, we comply with and we support. I would also note that, you know, the battery-powered equipment is significantly more heavy. I don't know if you've put that on. And so anecdotally, if you actually go to some of the resources that the California Air Resource Board put together when they were pushing forward with some of their proposals, they had lots of comments like the LA Zoo, for example, gave all of their workers the electric-powered equipment. And after one day, they all came back and said, we would like to have the gas-powered equipment back. So I just think that's something to take into mind. And it's simply because the performance of this equipment just makes them less attractive to people that are actually using them.
One more thing before I just say goodbye. Nancy, let me toss this first to you. In California, which does want to ban not just gas-powered leaf blowers, but gas-powered lawn equipment, mm-hmm. they've also set aside something like $30 million to help professional landscapers and gardeners make this transition. Does that seem like, especially in New Jersey, which is considering a ban, does that seem like a smart way to go?
Yeah, actually, there's another bill in the Assembly committee that is also addressing the cost factor to try to incentivize instead of, you know, penalize. And by offering, so they're trying to fund something similar where they would, sort of help landscapers and, you know, sort of transition by saving them money, or whether it's tax incentives or in some other way, that is being considered as well.
And separately. Final question to you before I have to say goodbye. I mean, one can see with electric vehicles, you know, that the technology when it comes to batteries and other electrically operated vehicles, that things are moving really fast. And do you see that will, in a sense, spell the end of these gas-powered leaf blowers?
I do, and I think that's great. I love hearing Nancy talk about more of the carrot versus the stick, because that's really what we're pushing for here. We actually pushed for a federal tax credit on the Inflation Reduction Act that would include the large riding mowers. But I think at the state level, as we're considering moving the industry forward, I do think we want to look at these incentives. I mean, these small businesses have purchased this equipment and are relying on it, and we want to help them make this responsible transition. So I love hearing Nancy say that. This is a great place where we can have good alignment as we try to move the industry forward and continue to protect the environment.
Well, Andrew Bay, we've got to leave it there. Thank you so much for joining us today on Radio Times.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Senior Vice President of Government Relations for the National Association of Landscape Professionals, Nancy Adams, staying with us for the next 10 minutes. She is Maplewood, New Jersey Township Committee member who helped to pass the ban on gas-powered leaf blowers in her community. Let me read just a couple of comments, and then we'll get another guest to join us. Harrison says, like guns, they should have a turn-in day when they get their money back, or rebates to use electric. A comment from Tom in Black Eddy, we compost leaves and use them as a way to improve garden without buying oil-based fertilizers, and on and on and on the questions and comments go. I'm not surprised. Yeah, and you're not surprised either, right, Nancy?
No, not at all.
Well, it's funny. We tend to think of leaf blowers as a suburban phenomenon, but that's not true. In fact, Washington, mm-hmm. D.C. has banned gas-powered leaf blowers. Violators face a fine of something like $500. Some residents of Philadelphia want to phase out gas-powered leaf blowers and have started something called Quiet Clean Philly campaign. And joining us is Seth Lieberman. He is co-founder. And Seth, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you, Marty. And also, I'll just say, Nancy, you're one of our heroes. You really inspired us, along with the folks in D.C., so it's an honor.
Well, that's great. Well, Seth, what do you want to have happen here in Philadelphia? What's your goal?
Well, you know, Philadelphia, is, as you know, is the sixth biggest city in the United States. But Philly also has the highest poverty rate of the largest U.S. cities. And that comes along with childhood asthma rates that are just through the roof. And so we believe if we don't eliminate the obvious causes of illness, such as banning those emissions from the gas leaf blowers, that our inaction is saying we don't care about our kids and the vulnerable here. So we have started a campaign. Our goal is to ban gas leaf blowers in the entire city of Philadelphia.
And do you have buy-in from city council yet?
Well, we're in sort of startup mode. We literally started 1 month ago. So we have a website, quietcleanphilly.org. We have a petition that we've been putting out the word just in our networks on Nextdoor and Facebook, but that petition already has well over 300 signatures. So right now we're growing our grassroots. We're trying to demonstrate that we have a coalition. The other thing we're doing, and it's germane to the prior guest, is that we're working to figure out how to get discounts and subsidies. So we want to bring our landscapers along and help them make that transition.
Let me read a couple of comments. In fact, one from Mount Airy. This is Craig. He says, our Mount Airy neighborhood is assaulted weekly from numerous sides by deafening gas-powered leaf blowers used by professional crews. We'd love to see Philadelphia ban their use. Hopefully, battery-powered blowers would be a more suitable alternative. And if I can go back to you, Seth, is that the goal? I mean, it seems like these communities that have banned these gas-powered leaf blowers are going electric. Is that the idea in Philadelphia as well?
Yeah, I mean, there are folks, and especially in the Mount Airy neighborhood, who will put out that we don't really need to move these leaves at all, or we don't need to move them as much, and we can use them. And we support all of that. Personally, we rake. But yeah, our goal is to ban and do the transition to electric. We know from testimony in Washington, D.C., that electric is already good enough. I just spoke with the facilities manager at Allen's Lane Art Center, Anthony Skinner, and I saw him blowing leaves and we talked. He advocated to switch over from gas, and he said that the electric was plenty powerful enough. And in fact, he let me pick it up. It wasn't even heavy.
Let me read a comment from Robin, and I'll put this to you, Nancy. She says, I'm a night shift ICU nurse. The noise from gas leaf blowers makes it impossible to sleep, even with earplugs and a white noise machine in my bedroom. It is a uniquely intrusive sound in its volume and frequency, and it can be as much as 100 decibels, Nancy. And I wonder, I mean, we began by talking about the noise of these leaf blowers, but just how intrusive they can be.
That's really a shame. I feel bad for a really important role, being an ICU night nurse and not being able to get proper sleep. And, you know, when we were first talking about this on a local level on the governing body, we had 2 hours of public comment, both for and against, with, you know, and I remember one resident coming up and saying, you can't tell me how to maintain my property. And our response back was, well, there are externalities involved with the way you maintain your property as opposed to the way someone who just rakes their leaves or uses a broom on their sidewalk. And the externalities do things like keep an ICU nurse awake in the middle of the day when she's supposed to be sleeping, right? And there are real issues that come with this. It's not, and for what, you know, like what is our goal? How much do we really need every blade of grass removed from a hard surface after I mow my lawn? It'll go away in a day anyway.
Well,
you know, so there's just logic.
Well, and we have actually our fourth guest waiting in the wings once I say goodbye to you, who wants people to rip up their lawns and just go native.
Yeah,
and we
correct.
Will get to that. Let me just read a couple of more comments. Here's one from John, and I don't know if you can take this, Seth. John says, how do you measure the emissions on these machines, and taxpayers shouldn't have to pay for the switch to electric? Have you been able to figure out, and I think there's some more research and science to be done to try to figure out the exact emissions and their impact, but I'd just be curious about your response to John.
We know that there are very significant emissions, and we know that these are cancer-causing substances. We also know from the California Research Board and from the Edmonds study that the emissions are just off the charts. I mean, this is the dirtiest engine we allow, and the example is that that a 30 minutes with a gas and oil leaf blower creates the emissions of driving from Philadelphia all the way to Juneau, Alaska in a Ford pickup.
Mm-hmm. That's a lot of emissions.
Yeah, I would just add to that the getting all back down. When we talk about a state ban and stuff, we already know that the fossil fuel industry is fighting us on this. They're fighting on a lot of things. And meanwhile, we just had a resolution passed at the League of Municipalities this week. I'm one of the 200 elected leaders around the country who's part of the Center for Climate Integrity to pushing not only states, but municipalities, whomever, on government entities, to be able to hold fossil fuel companies responsible for the climate damage they have caused. And that, when you think about how much they've caused, and this, and then they spend money and time lobbying and fighting common sense, you know, laws that try to protect our communities and protect our air, and we don't need a hurricane every fall with people dying in stormwater runoff, just, you know, drowning people. It's insane, and it's costing all taxpayers a ridiculous amount of money. So we need a paradigm shift on what we're doing here. Like, and we need the political will, frankly, to, you know, I was tenacious enough to carry this torch on leaf blowers for 6 years and to enforce it and to follow it, because the reality is, just like with plastics, plastic bags, things like that, sometimes, unfortunately, we have to regulate because there are actors who are not acting responsibly, and we need to do that.
Well, and we need to leave it there. Nancy Adams, thank you so much for joining us today on Radio Times.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
You're very welcome. She is Maplewood, New Jersey Township Committee member. And Seth Lieberman, thank you for joining us on Radio Times as well.
Thank you. And we invite people to visit quietcleanphilly.org and sign our petition.
And we're going to take a very short break. And then we got a fourth guest waiting in the wings. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
I'm Marty Moss Cohen, and you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. We've been talking about gas-powered leaf blowers and their impact on the environment and human health. A growing number of cities and communities are taking steps to ban them or limit their use. In fact, California is going to phase out gas-powered lawn equipment by 2024. Our guest entomologist and wildlife ecologist Doug Tallamy says forget leaf blowers. It's time to shrink or get rid of your lawn and replace it with native plants, shrubs, and trees. He says it's an ecological dead zone that does nothing to support pollinators, food webs, manage the watershed, or sequester carbon. He's a professor at the University of Delaware, author of several books about the importance of supporting the natural world, including Nature's Best Hope, A New Approach to Conservation that Starts in Your Backyard, and The Nature of Oaks. He was a guest on Radio Times a number of times in the past. And Doug Tallamy, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
It's great to be here again, Marty, on your last day.
And my next to last day. We have one more show to go, and I'm happy to have you as our last live guest. So very exciting for us. And it seems a fitting way to end the hour talking about leaves and lawns. Let me get your take on banning these gas-powered leaf blowers. Are you in favor?
Oh, sure. You know, what we need to do is appreciate the ecological value of the leaves themselves. I'm thinking of leaves these days the way we think about water. We want to keep all the water that falls on our property so it can infiltrate. Well, we want to keep all the leaves that fall on our property too, because they contain the nutrients that the trees that made those leaves need the following year. They also, they've got a number of wonderful ecological roles. They form a blanket on the ground that protects the soil community. There are more species that live in the soil than above the soil. And they are the ones that are breaking down the leaves and returning the nutrients to the soil. You're talking about a tremendous amount of biodiversity, 250,000 mites per square meter of leaf litter, 100,000 springtails, 90,000 procturans, those are primitive insects, a million nematodes. There's a lot of life down there. And then all the predators, like lightning bugs, the larvae of fireflies, they're predators in leaf litter. So when we rake it all away or chop it up or burn it or throw it away, we're throwing away a valuable resource that our trees need, that our animals need. 70 species of moths eat dead leaves on the ground. And those moths are food for birds. So people don't think about that when they're blowing their leaves all over the place.
Let me read a comment from Eileen who says, and she posted this actually, Doug, before you joined us, but she said, you know, are people going to now ban grass cutting? You're ruining a whole industry for a few people who complain. It will cost customers many more dollars to get rid of the leaves. You can't leave them on all surfaces. It will cause massive drainage problems. Do these people pushing for this have anything better to do? I toss that to you. There's a whole hour's worth of conversation there.
Yeah.
Because you're, can I say, anti-lawn and pro-leaf?
You can say that, but I don't suggest we get rid of the lawn. I suggest we reduce the area in lawn. Lawn is a cue for care, and the lawn we keep should be manicured. It shows that we understand what the culture is. We like neat. We're just going to have less of it. Acres of lawn, maybe about 44 million acres of lawn in this country. That's an area bigger than the size of New England. Mm-hmm. So we're not talking about ruining an industry. I want to shift these lawn care industries into ecological industries, you know, ecological landscaping. It's a vacant niche now. And wherever I go and talk in the country, people say, who can I hire? Well, you know, I don't know. not many people are doing this. So there's a tremendous need. There's no reason to maintain an industry if it's destroying the planet. That's just not a good reason. And if we keep leaves on the ground, they absorb moisture. They're not going to cause drainage problems or whatever she said. They're helping the infiltration to capture the water as it falls and keep it on your property. I guess she's talking about leaves that get stuck in your drains.
Sure.
But,
just dig them out of the drain.
Compromise. No.
Okay. Let me ask you a really practical question. I will confess, I mulch my leaves. So when I'm running my lawnmower, I grind up the leaves and then I put it on my vegetable garden beds and my flower beds. But, you know, I have to say, in preparation for the show, I destroyed a lot of little critters by doing that, correct?
You did. Picture that Luna moth cocoon that's in your leaf there. It's now a little mush. The trees in our yard are the main biological engines that fix energy from the sun and turn it into food, and then they pass it on to animals. And those animals typically are insects that other animals eat. Well, most of the insects are caterpillars, actually, and those caterpillars don't stay on the tree during the winter. They drop to the ground and they pupate underground under your tree, or they spin a cocoon in the leaf litter under your tree. So keeping the leaves under your tree allows them to, it keeps the soil from being compacted. They can get underground safely, or they're spinning a cocoon and staying in your leaf litter. When you grind it up, you're not losing all the benefits of leaves because they're still going to have the nutrients and things. But you are grinding up most of the things that live in those leaves. If you've ever watched your sparrows in the wintertime, a white-throated sparrow or towhees, these are birds that do a little dance in the leaves. They're kicking leaves backwards. And what they're doing is looking for all the things that live in those leaves. When you throw that away, you've thrown away a ton of bird food. And one more thing.
Sure, go ahead.
Leaves last a lot longer when you don't grind them up. An oak leaf will last up to 3 years before it totally breaks down. So it's being a good ground cover for 3 years. If you grind it up in the mower, it probably won't make it through a single season because you've really hastened that breakdown process. And then you've got bare soil, and bare soil is an ecological no-no because that destroys the soil community, all the mycorrhizae that transfer nutrients to your plant roots. all the wonderful things that are happening underground that we don't appreciate because we can't see them.
A question, though, if you leave leaves on the lawn and you have a lot of trees, that's a lot of leaves, do you end up then smothering your lawn?
Well, yes, which is why we don't leave them on the lawn. We're going to get them off the lawn.
I hear you. All right.
We're going to put them in beds under the trees. A great way to make a new bed, by the way, is to rake the leaves under your trees and pretty densely that first year, because that will smother the lawn. Then you can plant ground covers right through it the next year. But no, I get it. When you have lawn, you want to. It's got to be pretty lawn. That's one of its main functions. It's also the perfect plant to walk on without killing it. So we do rake the leaves off. You know, functionally, a leaf blower will get them off, but an electric leaf blower will do that just as well. But grinding them up with the mower is not the number one option in my view, because it does grind up all the things that are in those leaves.
Fair enough. A lot of comments here. I'm not surprised. LJ says the neighbors, all of them, use standard landscape companies. It's always so painful to hear the army of leaf blowers devastate all the ground nesting birds and other creatures. I always laugh when they complain that I have all the birds. Do you have that same complaint?
No, I actually live in a place where it doesn't happen very much. We hire these people. They're working for us. We're not working for them. If you hire a standard lawn care company or you know, landscape company, tell them what you want. I don't want any leaf blowers. I want you to do this with my leaves. I don't want you to grind them up. They will do what you ask them to do, or they'll say, I'm not going to work for you, but they'll do it, and they'll charge you for it. But the way we respond is as if we have to do what they say. We don't. They're working for us.
Here's a comment from Shana. Says, I've noticed the leaf blower noise echoing in my ears throughout the day, and I worry what that means for workers. And that was actually something I was talking with our previous guest about, the workers who work for these companies. And while our guest from the Landscape Professional Organization said, you know, we follow OSHA, you know, is that enough to really protect these workers?
Well, you notice most of them have ear guards on. Yeah. I mean, they're protected. I actually have never used a leaf blower, and I don't know how well that blocks the sound out. But yeah, it can be deafening. They're not high paid workers, and they're happy to have a job. That's the problem.
Right, and a number of them are immigrants as well, and you know, one can understand their desperation to make a living. What about leaving stalks of plants and flowers? You know, instead of cutting them back and cleaning up the yard, leaving them up for the winter, is that a good thing to do?
Well, ecologically, it's a good thing to do, but I understand that's an aesthetic challenge. Heather Holm, who works with bees a lot, has discovered that most of the bees that nest spend the winter in the stems of things like goldenrod and those, you know, the herbaceous plants that have those dead stalks during the wintertime. What you do if you cut them off about 15 inches above the ground, and that gets rid of most of the stem, the following year, the following summer is when the bees will use those and use them the following winter. And then plants grow up past them so that you actually can't see those stalks at all. But that's a way to minimize the kind of the ugliness of dead stalks in the wintertime without destroying their functionality. Cut them off maybe 12, 15 inches above the ground. And it's easier to tolerate them that way.
Where do we get this notion of you know, pristine leaf-free lawns? Where did that come from?
It's a status symbol. It came from the aristocracy of Europe. The only people that could have such lawns were they either had enough money that they didn't have to use it for agriculture, they had enough money that they had the sheep to keep it cut, or later on they had slaves to keep it cut. But before we invented lawnmowers, it was only the rich who could do that, and that has carried over. And then, of course, marketing has gotten into it. Now you get the message that if you don't have a weed-free, perfect lawn, you're a communist, or you're just a bad citizen. I mean, we've heard it all, really. Your neighbor will hate you. That's the message. And people want to be accepted, so they do it.
I've seen in my neighborhood some lawns where they have a sign that says, you know, the reason it looks this way is because I want to protect our habitat and invite birds and other critters to enjoy my yard.
Right. That has been shown to help a lot. these little habitat signs that the National Wildlife Federation has them and other groups. Because it says that I'm doing this on purpose. You know, I'm not just a bad citizen. There are things you can do, though. You can create habitat in your yard and still have it look neat and tidy, using lawn as that cue for care. One or two mowers width of lawn along your driveway or your sidewalk and around your beds shows that this is intentional. And it does look neat. It looks pretty. And it doesn't really destroy what you're trying to do. So I suggest doing that.
Here's an email from Beverly. We have beehives and care deeply about the non-toxic yard we have for them. We also have three sons who use the lawn to play soccer and other games with their friends and cousins. And our lawn hosts our friends and family for picnics. There is an important place for lawns. We collect our leaves for compost, so there is a possible balance. And I'm assuming, Doug Tallamy, you would agree with that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Lawn is a great place to play when you're young. I did it as a child. But I look around, I'm glad she's using her space, but you know, look at giant lawns where I live, all around me. There's never anybody on it. Every once in a while, there's a PlayStation, which is also empty. And especially in the summertime when it's hot, the only people on that lawn are the people mowing it once a week.
Yeah.
So yes, it's an opportunity to play, but there's also the park down the street and more they're available. And that's a fleeting period in your life, really. If you have 10 years of lawn use with your kids, that's usually a lot. Then they're off into other things. So if you're going to use a lawn, that's great. But if you're not, let's put some plants there.
Well, in fact, let me read an email from Kevin who says an alternative to lawns would be to create a native plant meadow. Native plants are strong, important to insects and birds, and lower maintenance from grass cutting and leaf blowing. And I'm assuming that's, you know, someone who speaks your language there, Doug Tallamy.
It certainly is. But a word of caution. Making a meadow is probably the hardest thing to do. It is easy to plant a tree. It is hard to have an invasive-free native meadow. It takes a lot of maintenance, and it's difficult to get started. A lot of people think, I'll just stop mowing my lawn, and I'll have a nice meadow. Unfortunately, that's not the way it works these days with all the invasive plants we brought in. You can achieve a nice meadow, but it takes input to do that.
Here's an email from Lucia. Landscapers should know how to put mulch around trees. They mostly are done incorrectly with a thing called volcano mulching. And I see that. I'm sure I've talked with you, Doug, about volcano mulching and what that does to a tree.
Yeah, it rots out the base of the tree. It's an amazing sociological phenomenon here. We've been talking about how bad volcano mulching is for 15 years. Every time I go to a landscape conference, they talk about it. And yet they still do it. I can't understand it. Yeah, who knows? I think the Tyson chicken plant down on the Delmarva Peninsula, if you drive by there, they've got a number of, I think they're crepe myrtles, and then a telephone pole, and then crepe myrtles and a telephone pole. There's a volcano mulch even around the telephone pole. So I guess they think it's aesthetically pleasing.
I was going to say, all about aesthetics. Your goal in 30 seconds or less is to create this sort of interconnected world of backyards. Can you speak to that in 30 seconds or less?
I can, and front yards. I don't want to cut our conservation opportunity in half.
Right.
Yeah, we've got a nonprofit called Homegrown National Park. We want people to join it. It's free. And accept the responsibility of taking care of your piece of the planet. Because it is our responsibility. It's a grassroots movement that's going to solve the problem here. We've got climate change, but we've got biodiversity loss. And biodiversity loss is every bit as important because that's what runs the ecosystems that support us. Can we support biodiversity at home? Yes, we can, and it's not hard.
We have to leave it there. Doug Tallamy, thank you so much for joining us today in Radio Times.
Thanks for the chance.
Absolutely. Professor of Entomology and Wildlife Ecology at the University of Delaware, author of a number of books, including The Nature of Oaks and Nature's Best Hope, a new approach to conservation that starts in your backyard. Go to WHYY.org/Radio Times to find out more about the program. And you can always download a podcast of the show wherever you get your podcasts. Diana Martinez, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Debbie Builder and Paige Murray Bessler. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Thank you so much for joining us.